Blog Talk Radio.
The following wrestling broadcast is performed by highly trained professional athletes. It is not recommended that their actions be imitated in any form whatsoever in the home. This is the LAW Retro Wrestling Hour with your host, Frank Namoli, and wrestling's masked cowboy, the Maverick. All right, it's Friday night, and we are back after a two-week vacation. You know, we had to take some time off here. This is the LAW Retro Wrestling Show, and I am your host, Frank Namoli. And by my side, my ever faithful partner, wrestling's only masked cowboy, riding in his with his horse at the last moment, the Maverick.
I'm here.
Yeah, I was pretty sure we were canceled. I was just going to sit at home and watch the rest of the Lego movie.
No, we are actually the highest rated show on the Totally Driven Entertainment Network, as per a memo that came out. Apparently, on the 2 weeks we were not on, the ratings
we had our
for the
highest
entire
ratings.
Network. No. The ratings for the entire network tanked. They were getting ready to declare bankruptcy. They begged us to come off a vacation. You know, I was vacationing in the Isle of Malta, and you were out in Mantua, and you know we had to come back and make things work again.
I see. I was told that the two highest rated shows we had were the last 2 weeks. So, I don't know. We got our cues a little mixed up there.
No. Trust me. My word is good. It's actually posted on Facebook, so you know it's true.
Oh, your word and Facebook? How can it go wrong?
Exactly. So how you doing there, partner?
The two most guaranteed things in the world. I'm good.
Yeah, it feels good to be back. We got it. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, I thought that was my allotted amount of words for this week.
Nah, we got to get back in sync. But, yeah, it feels good to be back. Like I said, we got a good show tonight. We're going to be talking the light heavyweights. And, I'm actually surprised this is something we haven't touched on before, because this is a great, great subject, especially for retro wrestling, because, I mean, you can go so many different directions with this. And to me, sometimes, you know, the light heavyweights, I enjoyed them more when there was less of them, but I always thought that they added something to the card, something more to the card. It was just a change of pace, you know, to me back in the day.
You're exactly right. We've talked about this in the past, how one of the things that we both feel are hurting today's product is everybody works the same style. Back in the day, you didn't have that. We talked about the big muscular guys. We've talked about the various kinds of monsters. Each of them did different things in the ring. And the junior heavyweights, the light heavyweights, and eventually the cruiserweights brought something different to the table. They were another aspect of the show. Now everybody does all the same stuff, so it doesn't matter. You know, you don't have that excitement of the light heavyweight match and then a brawling match. But, you know, it was definitely a fun list to create. There was a lot of different things going through, and I actually found, as a little bonus later, the very first junior heavyweight match I ever saw.
It
wasn't something, coming up in the 80s, it wasn't a prominent part of the show. The WWF was the first and for a while only wrestling we got until I was able to get cable and start watching the NWA on TBS and eventually AWA. And WWF really didn't recognize their light heavyweight belt. It was in Japan having a life of its own. But the first one I saw live on TV was quite a change of pace for me. And it was clearly, as it grew, became a bigger influence on me as I realized that I was not going to be blessed being over 6 foot tall and 300 pounds of muscle, so I was going to have to come up with a new plan. And did quite a bit in the light heavyweight division, junior heavyweight division, especially back when it was
yeah.
more of a classic style.
Exactly. When I started first watching wrestling, you know, back in the 70s and early 80s, there was only two times you saw the light heavyweights. If they were going to get crushed or if there was, you know, like a light heavyweight attraction. But, you know, the matches, they did it up. They did it up back in the day. They were always fun to watch. Very entertaining. And then, you know, once in a while you'd get the mix where, like, ooh, can the light heavyweight champion go toe-to-toe with the heavyweight champion? And it was always, you wondered, and once in a great while the two worlds would cross, but they most times didn't. And I always thought that added so much to the storylines because you always wondered, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, there were certain special performers who you could totally see winning, and they'll probably end up on both of our lists so without getting into it. But yeah, I mean, certain characters, certain performers over the years had top billing. And in Japan and Mexico, you know, the light heavyweights did get top billing a lot more than they ever did in America, where size was, you know, size was everything in the American style of wrestling. So these light heavyweight guys would travel the world. These junior heavyweight performers could travel the world and be top marquee stars in the country. And they would main event over here, but very rarely was the junior heavyweight championship ever put on the same level as any major singles. Even the secondary belts played a bigger role than the junior heavyweight championship, especially up here in the East Coast.
That is true. That is true. Now, if you guys want to call in with your junior heavyweights or your memories, you can call in at 718-508-9883. And, you know, we'll take them in the order that they come in. And also, if you can't call in, maybe if you're at work and you're hiding and you don't want your boss to know that you're listening to our great show, you can ask your questions on the LAW Retro Wrestling Facebook page. And, you know, we'll answer. And then, as always, as we're talking about our favorites, we like to post YouTube videos so you can see what exactly we are talking about. So, as always, you know, we got to pay some bills. So we're going to do that real quick. And when we come back, we're going to get right into the light heavyweights of wrestling.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin in the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in Southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
Are you looking for a mortgage for that new home? Do you want to refinance to a lower rate, obtain cash out, or consolidation? If so, call Anthony Muscarella of Advisors Mortgage Group. Advisors Mortgage Group is a mortgage banker and loan our own money to first lien mortgage loans. We have built a platform for a seamless and stress-free mortgage process, which remains our number one goal for all of our customers. We understand that success cannot be obtained without teamwork and communication, two of our most important strengths. If you're looking to apply for a loan or simply have some questions, please don't hesitate to give Anthony Muscarella a call at 732-749-3333, extension 12, who, by the way, has been recognized by Mortgage Executive Magazine as being one of the top 1% of originators in America. That number again, call Anthony Muscarella at 732-749-3333, extension 12, where we tailor our loans to meet your needs.
Advisors Mortgage Group is an equal housing opportunity lender licensed by the New Jersey Department of Banking and Insurance. Branch NMLS number 173453. Loan officer NMLS number 111400.
All right, we are back. And one thing I wanted to bring up to you before we get into our list.
And sorry.
It kind of amazed me over the years, but as the light heavyweights progressed, I think some of them, and like you said, we're probably going to have these on our list, got to the point where they were just too good to be light heavyweights. It was like almost like they were too good to be kept back.
In American circles, yes, very much so. They outgrew the division because America's treated it as American promoters and companies treated it as a subdivision, for a lack of a better word. It was a pigeonhole, and some of these guys did very much grow out of that and needed to be in the major thing. Instead of adding importance to the light heavyweight belt, the junior belt, they pulled them out of the division. And then there's actually one guy who's an honorable mention on my list who never got the, even though he was a pioneer in the early 90s of the WWE, then WWF, broadening the horizons and bringing in smaller guys, he never really got the credit he probably deserved as being a light heavyweight wrestler. Because he got...
Scott Putski?
Exactly. No. He was on our worst list. That's probably the only time we should ever mention him. Unless we do revenge of the worst.
Worst kids ever.
Right?
Oh, man. Well, you know, these people listening to hear us get into our list. So let's get into it. And as always, you start it off, sir.
All right. I don't necessarily have any particular order for my list this week. I know I don't a lot, but in this case, there's a lot of different reasons why these guys are on the list. For me, my first choice this week is a guy who literally could work any style against anybody. And it made him a cornerstone of the late 90s WCW cruiserweight movement. And I think he was amazing, and he didn't have the pizzazz and flash of a lot of the other guys, so he didn't reach that level that some of the guys he worked with did, but he was most of the reason why those guys attained the heights they did. And I'm talking about the Iceman, the Man of a Thousand Holds, Dean Malenko.
Interesting. You know what? He was a light heavyweight, but I guess because he never did the higher flying style, a lot of people don't remember him as a light heavyweight. He was actually an illusion, if you will. They remember him one way, but you are 100% right. I thought he was one of the best light heavyweights, and pound for pound, one of the best wrestlers in the world.
Yeah, I mean, let's say he made his fame in the WCW cruiserweight division, and he wasn't he wasn't the flashy guy, he wasn't the flying guy, but he was the base. He worked them all. If they were mat wrestlers, if they were your Japanese strong style, as they call it, wrestlers, if it was a luchador, you know, he was the backbone of that division for that reason. He literally could wrestle anybody, and he was so good. And the stoic character, he had such an old school presentation to him that I really, really liked. You know, he just seemed like a wrestler. When you look up the word wrestler, Dean Malenko is one of the first guys you should see as far as when you're talking about wrestlers and not your stereotypical pro wrestler sports entertainers. And I think, I mean, I have to differ. I think he goes down as one of the best light heavyweights. I don't think he's been overlooked at that because that's where he had his most success.
Yeah, I guess what I'm trying to say by overlooked is I don't think people remember him as fondly in the light heavyweight as they do just for his pure wrestling. But that's just my opinion, you know? It could be wrong.
It most definitely is. Because I mean, where else did he really stand? What you know, stand out? Name his titles. You know, he was what, TV title, maybe U.S. champion, and in the WWE, he didn't do nearly as much as the rest of that crew. Yeah, he was the light heavyweight. I think he was the cruiserweight champion there.
I don't remember. WWE.
Then he did that dirty old man gimmick with Lita, and that was pretty much the end of him.
Yeah, the dirty old man gimmick seems to be the beginning of the end. I think that's the last gimmick you get before you got to go.
Yeah, for sure.
But definitely a good choice. And if you get a chance, you might be able to find some of them on YouTube. You got to get matches with him and his brother.
Joe?
Where they were wrestling in Japan.
Okay.
Very, very good. Guys, them two were so far ahead of their time. And I'm actually surprised we didn't hear more from Joe than we did. But, you know, they had a good career. And then Dean went on to do a lot of great things. Now, is he still with the WWF? Because I know for a while he's an agent.
Last I heard, he's still in the office. I haven't heard anything. And he's one of those guys who, as little of a splash he made in his career, you know, he's made less in the office. You never hear anything about him. You see him once in a while, but he's not one that causes trouble. He's probably that dude who's the most reliable guy in the room, just like he was in the ring.
Yeah, I mean, hey, man, if you can hide out and get paid for it, why not?
He's got that Harvey Whippleman money. He got paid for 20 years, and Vince had no idea that he worked there.
There's a couple people I think that may fall guilty to that. All right. Well, like you, I kind of got away from the top five because I really couldn't rank the guys that I have. But the first name on my list is a guy who I think kick-started a lot of the light heavyweight stuff in the United States to do it into the next level. I think he got overlooked as it progressed, because he moved to that next level. But the first guy on my list is Brian Pillman.
Wow, what a great pick. And I completely did. It's funny, I did not include him on my list, but when we talked about this theme, his match with another guy who did make my list was the first one I thought of. But yeah, you're right. Was he the first when they redid the WCW light heavyweight division?
Yes.
When they brought it back in the late 80s, I think he was the first, and he did an excellent job with that title. It's a shame. I really would have loved to have seen what had happened to it had it been given the respect that it started out with. And Pillman was an absolute great, great first champion.
And the thing that always impressed me about him was he was the ultimate undersized underdog, but he would go in there and the match I posted was him and Flair.
Right.
From 1990. And if you watch that match, and if you watch it as a fan, you really honestly believe that at any moment he was taking Flair in this match. He had some classic light heavyweight matches. And then the thing that I thought always spoke about how good of a wrestler he was is when he could no longer do the high spots, he transitioned into the heavyweights very nicely.
Yeah, he completely changed his style and was able to work the heavyweight. And after the injuries and the issues and just, I guess, getting older, you see that a lot with international light heavyweights. As they get older, they change their style and they do a more grounded. And Pillman was able to make that transition nicely and took his whole career to a different level. Yeah, but what an excellent choice. And it's a shame because when they started that light heavyweight, those matches were great. That tournament, the setup, and the first handful of matches. And then that's when they brought in Bill Watts. And Bill Watts hated little guys. And he destroyed that division so bad. And it's a shame because it really never got off the ground the way it could. And then, you know, what, 10, 15 years later, they rechristened the cruiserweight. And by that point, Pillman had you know, wasn't quite going to keep up with those young lions and had already changed his style up considerably.
Yeah, he kind of graduated to being a horseman and, you know, other great things. But like I said, he was one of the guys that I think kickstarted the next level of the light heavyweights. And, you know, we got to give him a spot on the show. I call him our correspondent now, Brian Mackey. sent us his notes that Pillman actually beat Ricky Morton in the tournament finals for the first light heavyweight championship at Halloween Havoc 91. So if you got the WWE Network, you can actually go back and watch that.
There you go.
That's actually a good – hey, man, if you're going to watch something tonight, that's actually a good match. I may actually go back and watch that. So, again, you know, Pillman was the first person on my list. I honestly, to this day, believe that he – if his life hadn't been cut short, he would have been a world champion and probably fondly remembered to this day.
I think he's still finally remembered. I don't know that they ever would have given him the big belt. Even if his life was cut short, he had a lot of baggage, and it would have taken a long time for them to trust him enough to give him the big belt, I think.
Yeah, you might be right. You know, like I said, I would have liked to see where he went because you know, it was a shame because I was so excited when he started wrestling in the WWE and then he got injured and then you were waiting for him to come back. And unfortunately, it just never happened.
Right.
So. All right. So who's next on your list?
Well, I'm going to follow through with an earlier thought since I momentarily brought him up. One of the first matches I thought of, when we started talking about light heavyweight wrestlers was one of Pillman's biggest light heavyweight matches against Jushin Thunder Liger. It was a match. They did two great pay-per-view matches, and it was so fondly remembered they brought it back years later for the very first Nitro just because, you know. Filming had already been way out of the, and it wasn't even considered for the Cruiserweight division, but they're just like, we need to do this just because we can. You know, Liger, Jushin Thunder Liger, just an amazing, amazing little Mighty Mouse kind of guy. You know, this tiny little man, but he was so explosive and so powerful and made such an impact all over the world. And he's still today making an impact. He was just in NXT. I know he was in TNA not that long ago. He's still making the rounds, and it's a big deal. And I've always been a huge fan of those type of characters, too.
I'll tell you, I remember the promos for Liger. And I'll be honest, when they announced it was Liger versus Pillman, I wasn't that thrilled with it at the time. Because I honestly didn't realize how good Pillman was, and I didn't think he was going to be able to keep up with Liger. And I'm glad to say I was wrong, because they were two of the two matches that I have very fond memories of.
Yeah, they were just amazing. And that like actually led me to hunting down more Jushin Thunder Liger. You know, I got some of his stuff from Japan and watched a lot of those matches. And anytime he came over, even when he came over in the mid-90s, he wasn't utilized nearly as well as he should have in WCW, because they were so drenched with talent and he was only in for a cup of coffee. But it was always great to see him.
Yeah, definitely. I am like very fond memories of the Liger and Ultimo Dragon matches. And, you know, that was, you just, you couldn't say enough good things, man. Liger, and he overcame a lot too, you know. Like a lot of people forget, like, sorry, I'm drawing a blank with, did he had brain cancer, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And to actually come back from that, it's like, wow. You're, you know, and to come, not only come back, but come back and wrestle.
Right.
You know, that's just, to me, shows you just how tough he was. You know, or is, you know, like I said, he's still around. And, you know, he's 51 years old now.
Wow. And still going strong. Good for him.
Yeah, I seen the match, the NXT match, where he took on Tyler Breeze. And for a 51-year-old guy, you were just like, wow. You know, he can still get out there and go.
Right. Yeah, and good on Tyler Breeze to get a spot like that, a young kid getting a chance to work a legend like that.
And apparently, he actually just wrestled in the Best of the Super Jays tournament that just finished on Tuesday.
Did he?
Yeah. And this is from our buddy Brian. He said, 51 years old and still putting in solid matches. And Brian's quote, Liger is a god and I worship at his church.
Amen to that. Just phenomenal.
No question about it. And
I mean, I'm 43 and I won't even take a bump.
I stopped bumping at 32. So
yeah, good point. So he's got us beating.
Now, my next guy is basically my first taste of the light heavyweights. Was watching old WWF TV one day, and this guy came out with a belt that I had never saw before. So it was kind of interesting, because I've never saw this guy before, but apparently he was the WWF Junior Heavyweight Champion. And I am talking about the original Tiger Mask. I always butcher his first name, but I think it's
Satoru Sayama.
I always get the last part wrong. And oh my goodness, like I said, he came out and he had the cape and and you were just like, okay, who is this guy? And the next thing I know is you're just watching it and like, wow. And it really was my first exposure to the light heavyweights. You know, and he was the WWE light heavyweight champion. And if I'm not mistaken, he wrestled El Olympico, who was kind of one of them guys who was on the border of a light heavyweight champion but could go.
Right.
And you just and literally, I saw something that I had never saw before. I was glued, and then I became obsessed with Tiger Mask. And, you know, back then, there wasn't too much in the way of multimedia, so you didn't get – and then as I got older and found out about, like, videotapes and – then there was the Tiger Mask cartoons and the action figures. And he was just a large – he was basically the first comic book character come to life in my eyes. But he was also so solid and just knew when to put them moves in. He didn't just put them in to put them in. He knew when to put them in.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think the first time anyone saw Tiger Mask, number one, it was a life-changing experience because you've never seen anything like that. I didn't see him. I don't recall ever seeing him on TV. I did actually believe I saw him on one of those Coliseum home video deals.
Okay.
I vaguely remember it being like one of those world tour or international superstars things. It could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's where I saw it. Of course, you know, going back and checking out videotape his matches with, you know, Dynamite and Bret Hart and just the superhero, the comic book aspect of it really, really intrigued me. I mean, this guy was like the cape and the mask, like you said, and then to find out that there was comic books and cartoons. And actually, just as recently, 2013, in Japan, there was a Tiger Mask movie. I found the trailer for it while I was hunting, because Tiger Mask also made my list. They did a Tiger Mask movie. It's kind of crazy looking. It looks like an episode of Power Rangers, and he wears like a battle armor suit. But, you know, he's still, just to show you that character still maintains its popularity in Japan, even though it's been passed down.
Character after character. Yeah, they're on number 5 now.
Yeah, 312. It's Tiger Mask 312. 33 and a third. It's Tiger Mask 33 and a third is what they're up to.
Yeah, I'll tell you the one thing I liked about Superman number, you know, not, the fact that he was the first, but he did something that I still have yet to see guys do today, where he made some of his moves hybrid moves almost, where he's got a series of chain moves he does that turns into this little quick spot, and you're just sitting there like, wow. And then some of the stuff he does, it was almost like he was modifying pure wrestling into these hybrid moves. And I've never seen too many guys do it as well as he did, because I loved his the headlock chain combo he used to do. I don't know if you remember, where he would spin around and do like a little pirouette on his feet. It was just so fluid and phenomenal to watch. So, oh, you there, partner?
I'm here. I thought I'd lost you there.
Okay, you dropped off for a sec. But, yeah, it was like I said, he was just so fluid in some of the stuff, man. And it's like, wow.
Yeah, definitely. Something we've never seen before and probably will never see again, the fluidity of him being in the ring and the just the ability he had, the quickness. He was, you know, so quick he was subtle. You know, it was just like you didn't even know what he was doing half the time. It was definitely fun to watch, and definitely wish that we had more exposure to him here in the States. you know, looking back at these great matches he had all around the world, and the character, the Black Tiger, and everything like that. It would have been nice to have a little of that over here.
Yeah, definitely. Now, was there any of the other Tiger masks that stood out to you or that you enjoyed?
You know, no one that jumps out at me like that. Like, what? Like, I've seen a lot of the other Tiger masks. No one really. Actually, something is coming into my head now. There was one. What's his name? The one who.
Misawa?
Was it Misawa who became the second one? Or who's the third one, right?
Misawa was the second one, but he went on to become a bigger star after the Tiger Mask.
Right. Now, maybe that's one. There was one. I don't know. There was one who got particularly popular, and I can't off the top of my head. It may have been Misawa. But, yeah, no, I mean, when I look at Tiger Mask, I look at a lot of the older stuff, and Sayama is the one who really stands out to me.
And for me, it was pretty much the same thing. Like I said, I loved Misawa, but I think and our buddy Brian agrees that he – when he took off the mask, he actually became a bigger star.
A bigger star,
yeah. He was one of the best wrestlers in the world. But
I just love
the fact that they have such respect for the gimmick that they keep it going the way they do.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's and to be honest with you, when we were kids, we, you know, I didn't know that there was there was more than one. I was like, man, this guy has an age. And then you're here finding out they're like one, like you said, 362.
Yeah.
So that was the next one on my list. So who you got next there, partner?
Oh, I have him on my list as well. But moving down the line, I'll move into one of the guys I was back and forth on. But the next guy I'm going to pick. It's a crazy pick, but it was the first time I had seen a junior heavyweight match, especially a junior heavyweight title match. I said that earlier in the program on the show. And this stands out for me as one of the goofiest damn gimmicks that they did, because I was cracking up. I mean, we talked about, you know, gimmicks based on all sorts of different things, but this was the first gimmick that was based on a children's toy, to my knowledge. And I'm talking about Lasertron.
And who was Lasertron?
It wasn't me, sadly. It was another lovely member of the Guerrero family.
And you know what? I loved Lasertron. I thought that, you know what, if they put a little more thought into it, it could have went a lot further than it did. I thought they hit on something with this spaceman. The name was pretty stupid, and the fact that he was based off of a toy. But the crowd was into him.
Yeah, it was. I mean, you know, being that it was poor Hector under the mask, he had the Lucha Libre background to be able to go in and do a lot of that stuff. And poor bastard, man. That's your resume. You were Lasertron and the Gobbledygooker.
You know what would have been genius on their part, and they never thought of it? If in the middle of the match, he's running around doing moves, and then somebody takes out the gun, shoots him in the little blinker, and he has to stop.
Puts him out. That would be great. That's how you beat him. You shoot him in his laser beam. Yeah. Another proud Guerrero tradition. Yeah, and it was I saw Dan, he was taking on Denny Brown, and that's the match I posted. And I was so surprised to see it because it was the first time I'd seen the NWA Junior Heavyweight Champion. I didn't even know what he existed. I'm like, what the heck's the Junior Heavyweight Champion? Especially when Denny Brown came out because he, you know, wasn't necessarily your stereotypical light heavyweight wrestler. honestly, he was a little short, but...
I'll tell you a funny Denny Brown story. We, when wrestling had just come to the Civic Center.
Yeah.
The back of the Civic Center was wide open and they never had wrestling there. So security wasn't the greatest. So you could get into the back where the cars were parked and, you know, go meet the wrestlers. Well, it was myself, my brother and my cousin. And of course we're looking. And then all of a sudden, we seen basically a treasure trove. Out comes Dusty Rhodes, Magnum TA, Ricky Morton, Manny Fernandez, and Danny Brown. So, of course, we all run out with our little autograph books. And at first, the security stopped us, but Dusty's like, no, let him come. Let Dusty, you know, hey, come on, let him come in. We all started, and we're all happy. Like, we're just handing our books. We're handing our books. I was so bummed out. The only autograph I got was Denny Brown.
Denny Brown, did you even know who he was?
No, you did know who he was, but you were just like my brother's like, hey, I got Dusty and Manny Fernandez. My cousin, oh, yeah, I got Magnum. And I got Denny Brown.
I got a rock.
It was. Oh, man. It was basically the Charlie Brown, so that was my brush with Denny Brown.
Yeah, Denny Brown.
But
hello? Oh, yeah.
Yes, getting back to the Guerrero, you know, I'm watching the match now, and he definitely was like, he was another innovator too. You know, I think if somebody picked up on him earlier, he definitely would have been a presence. But you know, by the time the light heavyweight started kicking in the United States, you know, Hector wasn't no spring chicken.
No, he was definitely older, and I'm sure he made a. I mean, the Guerreros all did well regionally. You know, Eddie being the youngest had the advantage of being in for the second boom. But yeah, I don't. He's made a couple of rough career decisions. and Lasertron, you know, the costume. I saw this guy. I'm like, what is this dude? And I was like, he's awesome. You know, at the time, because I was, you know, this was the mid-80s, so I was like five. And
yeah,
and I thought he was the coolest thing in the world. It wasn't until later that you're looking back on it, you're like, wait, his whole gimmick was based on the video game Lasertron? Well, not the video game, but the... And now I just can't help but look at the game and not think of good old Hector.
Hey, that and Thanksgiving are the only two times people think of Hector.
That's the truth, too.
All right. Well, the next one on my list, and I think any list, how can you not have this guy? Because I think when it comes to light heavyweights and wrestlers in general, he may be the best of the best. And I am talking about one Mr. Lionheart Chris Jericho. I think that... Because, you know, when he started out in the Thrill Seekers with Lance Storm, they were just all over the place. You know, they were high fly, and then, you know, even WCW, you know, had him as the Cruiserweight Champion, and it was funny because WCW didn't see him as anything more than that, whereas. You know, WWF seen a lot more in him, and
right.
You know, the rest, as we say, is history.
Well, I'll tell you what, as far as I think, as far as Jericho concerned, when he first showed up, I was not overly impressed. I'll admit, I'm a huge, huge, huge Chris Jericho fan. But it's funny going back and when I read his autobiography, he talked about how many times he went out there and screwed up and was awkward and messed things up. That's what I remember about the cruiserweight, the early cruiserweight matches of Chris Jericho, is how many times he botched stuff and things were screwed up and his promos. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until the heel turn and the legendary, legendary promo that, you know, if you ever traveled with Norm and I, we referenced the armbar promo pretty religiously when he declared himself the man of 1,001 holds when he was feuding with Dean Malenko.
Yes.
And every other move was armbar, to the point where someone just stole it. Dolph Ziggler just stole that promo.
Get out. I didn't know that.
Someone just did that promo on, I think it was either Raw or SmackDown recently, and I'm almost certain it was Ziggler. And that's when I really started to get behind Jericho, is that heel turn. He was doing the brat thing, and he was wearing Mysterio's mask around his neck.
Yes.
And he was stealing stuff from his opponents, and he was doing the crybaby. And then, you know, that was the tail end of it. And then he went to WWE, and they didn't use him as a cruiserweight or light heavyweight at all. And that's when he really, really took off to me. So he actually didn't make my list for that reason. To me, he did better in the heavyweight division.
He did, but like I said, I he definitely was. He cut his chops in the light heavyweight. And
I'm not arguing with you. You're absolutely right. It's just when I was making the list, I kind of overlooked him completely for that reason.
Yeah, and the reason I put him on the list is I think that was the classic WCW. I think that's, you know, the screw the pooch. That was the one where they were so short-sighted to not see what they had in him.
Right.
That's one that they definitely I think they definitely want back. But
they want it back, and he was one of the biggest for sure.
Yeah, he was definitely a game changer, and like I said, to me, I thought he was definitely an innovator.
Yeah, he was definitely entertained. Still continue, you know, entertains to no end. He's an amazing dude, and you know, the fact that he can still go and keep up at the pace that he keeps. I've always been a huge Jericho fan. I think he still does an excellent job of establishing and getting these young guys over, and is working as a great player coach right now.
He is, you know. And he tried his hardest to get AJ Styles over. He did try.
AJ's doing better than you'd like to admit in the WWE. He's finding his way.
Yeah, hopefully it'll be out the door.
I was a big fan of his matches with Roman Reigns. I think they did an excellent program together. It was actually better than his matches with Jericho.
I will tell you this. I was kind of impressed with the whole heel turn on Cena.
Right.
I like that. I like where they're going with that. It kind of reminded me of the Randy Orton back in the day. Hey, nobody likes me, so you know what? I'm just going to go with it.
Yeah, for sure. The only issue was the promo. Cena ate him alive.
Wow.
Cena's so good, and AJ is so bad. And AJ has always been bad on promos. I don't know if anyone ever told him or not, but he's just awful. And put him in there, and the other two guys don't help at all because I don't think they know how to speak. You got to get AJ some kind of mouthpiece if this is going to be unless it's a small thing, but I'm guessing they have big plans for it. they got to do something because AJ just sounded like a moron against Cena, and Cena just chopped him to pieces.
Well, you know what's funny is like you're sitting there mentioning a manager or something. You know, they just brought back Precious Paul Ellering on NXT.
Right.
That would be a perfect guy to put with them. As
AJ?
Your mouthpiece. Oh, sure. As a mouthpiece. I mean, if you need somebody to talk for him, that would be, you know.
No, he's a great talker. I just don't know that style wise that it fits. I think you need someone a little more contemporary for AJ. Not exactly sure who, but.
Well, Teddy Long's looking for a job.
Teddy Long was fantastic on Monday.
He was. Hopefully, we'll see more of Teddy soon. All right, so who's next on your list?
Next on my list, probably, you know, pound for pound, one of the best wrestlers in the world. Pound for pound, one of the worst human beings that have ever roamed the face of this earth. I'm talking about Tom Billings, the Dynamite Kid.
Now, that's not nice. You've never met him. You can't say he's one of the worst people on the face of the earth.
Every wrestling book I have ever read says that he's one of the worst human beings on the face of the earth.
Well, actually, if you read his book, he's pretty much said it.
Yeah, that's true. I did read his book, and he said he was one of the worst people in the world. That's very true.
But you know what the greatest line in that book was? You know, I'm broke, I'm in a wheelchair, and I've done some things I'm not proud of, but I wouldn't change a thing.
Yeah, right. I am sticking by it, which you have to get. He's not being boo-hoo. Yeah, Dynamite was just something. When the British Bulldogs showed up, they were a game changer for me. I was just obsessed with them. And that began my obsession with tag team wrestling was the British Bulldogs. And, you know, at that point, you start hunting down everything he did, and you find out that Dynamite had this amazing career before, and the British Bulldogs was the end of his career. And you think about how popular and amazing they had gotten. That was the end of his career. And he had this stellar career that you know, wasn't as nationally known, but inside wrestling circles, you know, the trips to Japan and the matches in Canada but the Tiger Mask matches, which I posted a tribute to from YouTube, because there's about 50 of them. And, you know, anytime he got to work with smaller guys, the few times he did in the WWF, it was always, always amazing. And, you know, even though he wasn't your traditional light heavyweight, junior heavyweight, because the WWF really didn't establish them, use them like that in that way, I think he's still one pound for pound, you know, one of the best.
Yeah, you can't say he was a game changer. And you know what? I'd say he was probably one of the strongest light heavyweights ever.
Oh, for sure. For sure. He was a beast.
Yeah, because that is not usually one who, you know, that's not usually something that goes hand in hand that
right, you think small. You think small, fast. You know, the small, fast guys aren't necessarily the powerhouses, but he was both. He was a very small total package, as it were. He had the speed, he had the moves, he had the quickness, but he was also, you know, just so much stronger than most of the guys he worked with.
Oh, and he would take your head off too.
Oh yeah. I mean, there's a combination in this Tiger Mask tribute video where they do, you know, just so many amazing counter reversal counters into cartwheels and handstands and flips and turns, and it just blows my mind. And the guy who loves, you'd never tell it by my matches, but a guy who loves that kind of chain wrestling, and I only tend to do it in training to mess with the greenhorns. It was just amazing to watch two guys that good at it, and didn't just speed through it like let's do it like. You felt like everything had a purpose. You know, they weren't faking anything. They weren't just counting spots in their heads. These guys were that damn good. It's not something they rehearsed a million times and then went out and did it in the show, and it looked like they were counting holds. You know, these guys looked like they were trying to kill each other, and it was seriously a game of one-upsmanship.
And that's what I was touching on earlier, where, like, the fluidity, the hybrid, and Dynamite was another one that did that. They almost took the art of chain wrestling and turned it into a higher art form.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
All right. We're talking about light heavyweights. So,
yes.
You know me. I got to throw some controversy, some trolling, some hatering out there once in a while.
You're putting Buddy Rose in, aren't you?
No. The big talk in the wrestling world is a light heavyweight match that recently happened. And it was out of Japan. And it was so unimpressive that I've actually forgotten who was in it.
Oh, good. So you've done your homework yet again.
No, I had it here. And I moved it to get a Jushin Thunder Liger info. And for some reason, the back button won't go back.
Go to your history. Well, then let's continue with our list.
Yes. And you know the match I'm speaking of.
I honestly can't comment on my opinion on it because I've yet to watch it. I've heard
okay.
I've heard it's very polarizing.
Well, without getting into that match.
Was it Prince Puma, I think, from Lucha Underground and another guy in the...
Ricochet and Offspray.
Oh, Ricochet, that's what it was.
Yeah. I saw it. Now, since you've seen it, I don't want to get your opinion on it, but would I like to get your opinion on that's, and I'd actually like to get our resident New Japan and light heavyweight expert, Brian Mackey's opinion on it. Does that style do anything for you, or do you even consider that like a good match where it's just move. Like, we're sitting here talking about how fluid and how awesome Dynamite and Tiger Mask looked, whereas that is just, you know, boom, 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 boom. Hey, we're not going to let you catch your breath, but at the same time, we're not going to give you anything to chew on. Do you think that is the you know, do you think it'll be the end of the light heavyweights if they keep going in that route?
Again, not. I have not seen it. I don't want to comment on. I mean, that particular, and I'm going to call it X Division style, for a lack of better things. And I'm not necessarily picking on the X Division because that it's not where the problem started. It's where it did get showcased. I am not a fan of overly produced matches in general, but when it's done well, can be an art form, and there is a place for that kind of. The problem is, and the problem as I see it is, so many people don't know how to do it well. And I talk about this all the time. When you're in a match, especially on the indies, and you see two guys in the ring, and they're just doing what is clearly a rehearsed spot that they have worked on over and over and over and over, to the point where they're more worried about finishing the spot than whether the damn thing works at all. I've seen guys, you know, do spots, and we've all seen this, where, you know, they're doing this overly rehearsed nonsense of a spot, and there'll be the guy will duck for a clothesline, and the other guy will forget to throw the clothesline. Like, what are you ducking?
Oh.
It looks super, super fake and predetermined, and, you know, you see the guy prep for the next reversal before he gets there, and to me, that level of – that's where the fakeness in pro wrestling really stands out. When people talk about it being fake, and then you see these highlight clips of this guy ducking a phantom clothesline that never comes.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other guy, instead of throwing a real kick, will put his foot up there because he's more worried about his spin-around flying kick to the back of the head reversal that's going to come out of it. And to me, I have a problem. I do not enjoy it. It's overproduced. Mm-hmm. It looks fake. But when two guys can do it and they do it well and it doesn't look like they've rehearsed that particular match 187,000 times, it does look good. There have been matches that I've seen like that. It was not my kind of match, but it was really well done. It looked like a real fight.
That's you know what? You basically nailed it, man. I couldn't have said that better myself. One of the things that always drove me nuts was when you see a guy going into a tilt-a-whirl and he's got three-quarters of the rotation already before he's even in the guy's arms.
Exactly. Exactly. So I can't tell you if that match was – I mean, I know Jim Cornette spoke out against it, but he's got a very distinct opinion. There are new school fans who really, really enjoyed it. Until I sit and watch it, I can't make a comment on how bad or how good it was.
And I'm not trying to single that out in particular. I'm just singling out that style. Because to me, like you said, we're talking about, light heavyweights and how they were game changers. And to me, I think that is – and this is just my opinion. This doesn't reflect anybody else. I think it's a de-evolution instead of an evolution.
Right.
Because it's like you said, it's almost like where – you're trying so hard to make it look better and make the moves are supposed to get better and they're supposed to look more devastating. And you're kind of going backwards, to where it's
yeah.
like, no, it's, you can tell, so
impact. Nothing has meaning. Nothing is chutzpah except we want to do 150 reversals in a row to impress you as opposed to, we want this to look like a fight between two men. It goes a little too ballet in that, mm-hmm. I'm going to pile drive you, and then when I pile drive you, you jump up to your feet and drop kick me, and it'll be awesome. No, it really doesn't look awesome. It's athletic, and it looks stupid that you just drop the man square on his head and shoulders, and his reaction was to jump up to his feet and kick you in the face. That was a hypothetical goofy spot. I know, and anybody who tries it this weekend on indie shows, I'm going to drive to your house and slap you. But, that's my point. You see some things that look so ridiculously goofy. Guys getting dropped on their head 2 minutes mm-hmm. into a match, don't even sell it or register it because he's got to finish the spot. And that, to me, is the de-evolution. That's what kills the business. That's why there's mm-hmm. so many people who won't buy it.
Yeah. Now our buddy Brian chimed in, and his opinion was back in 1978, I was only 8 years old. Brian probably wasn't born. I don't know how old you were. But he said that people claim the same about Flair and Steamboat, saying they did too many spots. They were going too quick. And he said in 83 – Tiger and Dynamite Kid were doing way too much.
Right.
And he is pointing out, and again, Brian follows the Japanese. He said the fans in that building, that's what they wanted, and they ate it up.
That ultimately is the bottom line. It's a style. Mm-hmm. It's a performance style, and people do appreciate that style. And like I said, I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of that style. But I can appreciate mm-hmm. when it's done well. My problem is with the guys who don't do it well. But yeah, that's and there's some great, great points there. That yeah, over the years the style has changed, and I do happen to notice that it's a lot of the older guys speaking up on it. Like I said, I've mentioned mm-hmm. Cornette, and there was a lot of old school guys who hated it. I didn't watch it. I'm a fan of the old school for sure, but I do my guilty pleasure is Lucha Libre, and which sounds crazy because so much of Lucha Libre drives me crazy from a purist standpoint. When you touch a guy on the shoulder and he goes flying into the ropes, that's goofy as hell. But I do appreciate the art form of it, and I appreciate the athleticism of it. So I think,
well,
if you're not a fan of
that
style, if you're not a fan of that, I know Ricochet is a luchador, and that's where he comes from, the Lucha Underground. That, and you know, if you're a fan of that style, you're going to enjoy that. But if you're one of those guys, and wrestling unfortunately is filled with them, that if it's not what you like, regardless, it's wrong. And you see that every week. Roman Reigns is the worst wrestler in the history of wrestling because he didn't come up in the indies. Well, that's not true, but people believe that. And, you know, that's, it doesn't matter how many times Roman Reigns goes out and performs at a quality level and gives you a damn good match, people are just going to hate. Because he can't wrestle. He can't. You put him in the ring with a guy who can wrestle, he's going to look stupid. Well, he went in with their darling and looked damn fantastic twice. And was not being carried. You know, he did the same against all those other guys for years in the Shield. He didn't get half as much slack as he got winning the title because it's not who they liked and who they wanted. Wrestling fans as a whole are crotchety and judgmental. And I think and they love to grab the pitchforks. You know, they've decided that this, for whatever reason, is the end of the universe and the end of wrestling as we know it, a percentage of them. And I don't even know how many of them have seen the match or how many of them are just piling on.
And again, like you said, you know, it's a different style that I'm used to. You know, and that's kind of why I didn't like it.
Right.
Is wrestling going to go that way? Who knows? But, you know, like I said, I think Brian brought up a great point. It was a Lucha-style match. And he said it did get them more free press than it made ESPN.
Yeah, I mean, for days, it's all people talked about. For days. So, yeah, good on them for doing that. And again, I'll sit down and watch it at some point. I just haven't had the chance to sit down and see what all the hullabaloo is around. But, you know, Ring of Honor has a strong vocal fan base. There are people who love that. There are people who don't. There are people who love the ultra-violent violent style of a CCW, and that's the beauty of pro wrestling. We talk about it all the time, that there's a lack of variety on shows. But that doesn't mean there's a lack of variety out there, and there's something for everyone. You know, some people like the family entertainment WWF style. There are people who like the high-paced, fast Ring of Honor, strong style. There are people who like Japan. There are people who like Lucha, and good on them. Find something you enjoy and watch it, and don't worry so much and complain so much about the stuff you don't like. It's why wrestling fans have such a stigma today. If the wrestling fandom as a whole, they act like spoiled babies all the time. Because, and I'm not talking about all of them, but as a whole, you see them act up, you see them misbehave, you see them be stupid over stuff like this, and it's really not worth it. If the people who went and got their money's worth out of that match and had a great time, then those guys did their job.
And that's you know what, that's the whole point of talking and going back and forth. You got to give your opinion, and you know what, you know our opinion is, you know, or you know, some of our opinions maybe. Hey, it's not our cup of tea,
right?
But at the same point, you know, you can't sit there and say it's bad because, like you said, it got press, and you know, when does wrestling outside of WWE make ESPN? That's what you got to think about.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, if that wasn't your style, don't berate people who didn't enjoy it. I mean, I don't like a whole lot of stuff, but different things. I don't watch it. I don't spend a whole lot of time killing it either because there are people who like it. You know, I said before, Ring of Honor is not necessarily my cup of tea. But I don't follow around Ring of Honor fans calling them stupid and idiots and bring the hate because they're entitled to their fandom and their opinion. I prefer the old school 80s style that I grew up on. I appreciate the 90s in your face attitude style that followed it. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's what I tend to watch. And when I sit down to watch, that's what I watch. And good on me. I enjoy that kind of presentation. And that's what this show is about. We talk about the stuff we like.
Exactly. And, you know, you, some of the stuff we like, people probably are rolling their eyes at, you know. I mean,
sure.
one of my favorite wrestlers of all time is a guy who 90% of the wrestling world probably never heard of, and that's Quick Draw Rick McGraw. And people are like, who? And it's like, you know what? If you never seen the guy, you didn't know what you were missing. But that's just my opinion.
Sure.
And again, I'm not going to hate you if you say, oh, well, that guy was a jobber, he was awful. No, because that's what he was portrayed as. He was the guy that got, you know, but it's like you said, you know, and I just wonder, and I look at it more from an evolution of the sport point of view. Like, is this good or bad? And that's why I like to hear varying opinions, you know.
And you know what? Hey, again, I can't tell you if the match was good or bad, but.
Mm-hmm.
You already answered that inadvertently when you said it made ESPN, it made the national news. You know, good, bad, or ugly,
mm-hmm.
it got people talking about wrestling. So for the sport as a whole, it didn't hurt it.
That you know what? That's another way to look at it.
Because, you know, there's no such thing. People now are going to look into that. They're going to go, oh, well, let me go see what this is all about. They may find something they like. They may go, oh, this is garbage. This is that fake wrestling stuff. I'm not watching it. Or they may go, holy crap, that was amazing. I need to see more of it. And hopefully they'll tune in. And then they'll start spending money on wrestling, which is everybody in the wrestling business is one hope and prayer. It's that people will spend the money.
Hey, man, we got a little trivia thrown at us. Did you know that Ricochet is actually dating Tully Blanchard's daughter?
I did not know that. I was mad, furiously mad, when I heard Ricochet was on and I Googled it and it wasn't the little kid from Mucha Lucha.
I missed that show.
I do too. I loved that show.
I love the Flea.
He was just awesome.
There should be, you know what? Any kid out there who's just coming out of wrestling school, get yourself a Flea costume. Call yourself
Frank,
the Flea.
Frank will book you.
I'm dead serious. I will book you. Well, as long as you know how to do it. But you can do no wrong with this gimmick. You'll make tons of money. You will be the next big thing. The Flea.
Mucha Lucha. It was such a great cartoon. I am not lie. I've seen every episode of it. And I at one point owned a DVD. And my kids had no idea what it was, but they still loved the cartoon because it was hilarious.
Oh man, that's something that should be. Imagine if they made that into a movie, man. Pixar, get on that.
I wonder if it's on Netflix.
I'm looking for. How bad are we that we both had the same idea? I am actually looking right now to see if it's on Netflix. Because now you got me in the mood to watch Mucha Lucha. You know what I got? You're about to be jealous. I actually got a Ricochet stuffed action figure.
Do you really?
Yes. Got him out of a machine, believe it or not.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I was actually trying to get the Flea. And
you got Ricochet. And Boy and Mad Dog. He's cool. Don't have any idea why the stupid page says 123 kid, but I just put a link to Mucha Lucha on the
okay.
on the page so you can enjoy the first episode of Mucha Lucha.
Nice.
Now I want to end this show so I can go watch it.
Man. Wait, wait a minute. You ain't got nobody else on your list? You were done?
And didn't I do five? No, I got more people on my list. Wait, who I got left? No, one, two. I already did six.
Okay. Well,
I got a seven.
Hey, well, we got a caller. Want to take the call?
No.
Caller. I think I know who it is.
No, we don't take a caller.
We're taking a caller. Caller, you are on the air with the LAW Retro Wrestling Show.
Hey, Frank, it's Brian Mackey. How you doing? How you doing, Matt?
There he is.
Good. How you doing, Brian?
We finally got him to call in. You know, we're sitting there comment. I was just going to start doing wrong comments to get him all pissed off so he would actually call in.
Now, as far as the Ricochet Will Ospreay match, my only issue with it, being the New Japan fanatic that I am, is that people will watch that match and just assume that's New Japan all the time.
Now, this was a part of the Super Junior tournament that they were running, right?
Correct. And it was the main event of that show because New Japan, when they do the Super Junior tournament, a lot of the shows, they will main event with the junior match.
Right.
It's just New Japan, and you said it earlier, like, you know, wrestling's like the circus. If you don't like the clowns, there's the trapeze artists. If you don't like that, there's the lion tamer. A little bit for everybody. And
exactly.
That's what New Japan is. Everything isn't junior. And I think some of the people coming out, like Cornette or Vader, just assume that's what New Japan is all the time.
Okay. So they're kind of more griping about it's not the New Japan they were in.
Right. Especially Vader.
Right.
And I think Vader was reacting to like a 10-second GIF that was on Twitter when he didn't watch the whole match either.
Yeah,
no,
that's really what
that.
Sparked. Yeah, that's really what sparked everything I've read. That's what sparked the furor was apparently there was a clip. It wasn't even the whole match was put online, right? It was just a sample, and people went absolutely nuts over it without even having seen the match.
Right. And New Japan, to their credit, because, you know, New Japan World is a pay service, just like the WWE Network. But to their credit, they put that match for free on their YouTube channel when they realized how much publicity they were getting.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, you know, ESPN, that alone. I mean, a few weeks ago, no one knew who New Japan was, and now... A whole new crop of sports and wrestling fans know it.
Now, I will say I'm not usually a flippy-do guy. That's just not my style. But as a one-time attraction for that one card, I was totally fine with it.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's really the – I mean, it was a specialty tournament to begin with. So, you know, people who would have been out to watch it clearly had an interest in that.
And what New Japan does with their junior division is they wrestle a different style than the heavyweights. Because if they don't, then they're just lesser heavyweights.
Exactly.
So they do different style, and they do a different spot, and they don't sell as much, and they go fast-paced, boom, boom, boom. Whereas the heavyweights, they do the longer matches, they do the rest holds. There's a lot of psychology. But anytime the juniors bump up and wrestle the heavyweights eat them up in their own style.
Which makes sense. Okay. So, well, Brian, you know, we were going through our list, so I'm going to ask you because you are my resident expert on who would you say is one of your is your top light heavyweight to throw on? I'm actually going to let you finish out the list. So, who is your light heavyweight and why?
Well, light heavyweight begins, continues, and ends with one guy, and that's Jushin Thunder Liger. Liger, to me, is the Wayne Gretzky of light heavyweights. He's the guy that redefined what it is to be a light heavyweight, a cruiserweight, a junior heavyweight, whatever terminology you're going to use. the first time I saw him, I was just blown away. And I had seen Tiger Mask. I had seen Tiger Mask and Dynamite Kid. It was actually the first Japanese match I ever saw in my life. And I haven't left Japan since. But Liger just, he just blew my mind. To the point when he finally came to the States in 91, we were torn. Like you would follow like Kiss or a rock band. He's in Baltimore, let's drive down to Baltimore. Meadowlands, let's go up to the Meadowlands. New Haven, Connecticut, nah, who cares? We'll drive up there, too.
Nice.
That's some hardcore there, man.
Like I said, he's God, and I worship at his church.
Oh, man.
And to this day, he's still wrestling, and he's giving it his all. And he's always putting over the younger generation clean in the middle of the ring because he knows that's what's best for business.
Well, I think some of the guys on the indie scene should take a lesson from that.
Amen.
It's all good in the end.
Especially that old fart Jannetty.
Talk about bitter. He is the Clint Eastwood from Gran Torino of wrestling. I just see Jannetty sitting outside a ring in a rocking chair. You kids get out of my ring.
You're killing the business.
Gotta go watch Doctor Who.
Hey now. Hey, I share that nerdism with him, so
That's the Friday night show there, pal. We don't discuss that on here.
We get memos.
Yeah, we are actually surprised we have not been canceled yet. But we are no longer allowed to reference Bay Ragney delivering meatball sandwiches and whatever else we did the one week. Well, gentlemen, on that note, it's getting late. Time to put the kiddies to bed. This was one of the most fun shows we've done in a long time, man. I really enjoyed the back and forth, you know. It was really great to hear different opinions. Brian, thank you for, each week, listening in and giving us – doing some research for us, helping us out. We do appreciate it. And you're welcome to come on anytime. If you the mood hits you up, we don't mind callers.
Well, yeah, I appreciate
Mike
it.
Ferrer. You're not allowed to call.
Now you guys do a great job every week. Thanks.
Thanks, Brian.
But we enjoy it. It's like, the point of the show is anybody can do a wrestling show. And,
clearly.
News wrestling shows are great, that's great, but
you have no idea what you're going to say. Just wrap the show up.
Well, no, I actually did. No, what I was trying to
no
say,
idea.
You know, why we have some
you're
great
trying,
wrestling.
You're trying to be profound and you can't do it.
See, this is what I got to deal with every week, Ryan. I'm trying to be prolific. Speak from the heart, and then I get yappy over here.
You need some letters from Holmes training.
Speaking of which, huge shout out. I got a letter.
I know you did.
From Santa Kringle, got a letter from Sherlock Holmes.
Oh.
It was basically a cease and desist to stop breaking and entering. Literally one of the greatest things I have ever read in my life. I am going to show that again. Thanks, Nick Wilkinson. That the letters from home that's a great little business. That is a fun and literally, Mav. It is a whole tirade from Sherlock Holmes on how he's going to catch Santa at some point,
and to clean up your reindeer poo.
That's awesome.
So, big shout out to Letters from Holmes and our buddy Nick Wilkinson. Big shout out to the whole Totally Driven Entertainment Network. Remember, we're going to be back next Friday night. I don't know what the topic is yet. Usually we don't know until Monday, Tuesday, sometimes Friday.
When you call me begging for a topic?
I haven't asked you for a topic in weeks.
Yeah, you did. It's the reason we took off last week is because I wouldn't give you one.
No, I told you I was in the Isle of Malta with my good friend Baron Miguel Sicluna.
Right.
Don't be jealous because I get to hang out with Barons.
Barons are cool.
On that note, on that note, gentlemen, it's good. Mav, you want to give the snappy goodbye?
Snappy goodbye. Happy trails, folks.
Are you ready to be totally driven? Totally Driven Entertainment Network has a full lineup of shows dedicated to total entertainment. Starting on Mondays, we have the always relevant and often hilarious Hard Talk with Big Daddy and Big Booty Trudy. That's at 6 p.m. And at 11 p.m., go 8 flights up and get your mind right. Tuesdays at noon, Pro Wrestling Now with Mike Ferreira covers professional wrestling news, rumors, and one-of-a-kind interviews with professional wrestling performers and insiders. At 8 p.m., join Smith Hart of the legendary Hart Family Dynasty for the Hart Grapevine as he goes behind the scenes and shares his knowledge of the professional wrestling industry and some truly remarkable special interviews, too. Welcome to Hump Day, Wednesdays, 9:30 a.m., the Coco and Wee Wee Show asks the age-old question, who do you love, who do you shove? And at 8 p.m., the Give No F's Cosplay Variety Hour brings you the best in cosplay, comics, video games, and more. Thursday nights at 5 p.m., Pro Wrestling Now with Mike Ferreira returns to the airwaves to cover professional wrestling news, results, and more. At 8 p.m., Totally Driven Radio, the show that started it all, brings you the best in topical conversations, celebrity interviews, exclusive musical guests, and so much more. Your Friday night would be incomplete without a trip to Uncle Shawnee's Playground. Join Uncle Shawnee at 8 p.m. and prepare to be offended, but, you know, in a good way. At 10 p.m., don't forget the LAW Retro Wrestling Hour, bringing back the golden age of professional wrestling. Saturday mornings at 10 a.m., the Mojo Sports Show starts your weekend off with a healthy dose of sports mojo. Get the latest news, scores, results, and more every Saturday morning. At 9 p.m., Totally Driven Radio rocks. Bay Ragney unleashes his inner beast as he takes you on a heavy metal journey and looks at the music he thinks rocks. That brings us to Sunday morning, the perfect time for a big weenie. At 10 a.m., the Big Weenie Castanini Show goes live around the world. And ending the week at 9 p.m. on Sunday nights, join the TV Nation for your weekly dose of the Nerd Herd and talk all things comics, TV, movies, and pop culture. Remember, get driven, stay driven.